Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. My guest on today's program is Josh Linkner. He's the author of a fantastic new book entitled The Road to Reinvention, How to Drive Disruption and Accelerate Transformation. Josh also has authored the New York Times bestseller Disciplined Dreaming, A Proven System to Drive Breakthrough Creativity. He's also the CEO of Detroit Venture Partners, and he's played a key role in the well-publicized turnaround of Detroit, Michigan. We'll be talking to him a little bit about that. He's the founder and former CEO of four successful tech companies, including ePrize, the largest interactive promotion agency in the world, and he's been honored as the Ernst & Young Entrepreneur of the Year and is a President Obama Champion of Change Award recipient. He's a regular columnist for Forbes, the Detroit Free Press, and Inc. magazine, and he also plays a mean jazz guitar. Have to check you out at some point with that, Josh. Anyway, welcome to Edgewise.
Thanks. Great to be here.
So let's talk about this idea of reinvention. If you go to the dictionary, it's going to be one of those like Charlie Rosie kind of things where I go, okay, now the dictionary says, I mean, there are three different definitions of the word reinvention. So if you'll bear with me. The first is to invent again or anew, especially without knowing that the invention already exists. Second is to remake or make over, as in a different form. And the last is to bring back or revive. Are you in a tighter orbit around one of those definitions, or does it spread across them? What are you thinking? Or when you invoke the term reinvention, what are you talking about?
Of those three, I like the middle one the best. The first one is sort of the futile effort of reinventing the wheel, as it's been said. And the last talks about going backward. To me, it really is about creating something anew. And it's about going from one point and really imagining what can be instead of just what is, and allowing innovation and creativity to lead the path as opposed to dogma.
How much of a part of that reinvention is reliant upon the power of imagination or visualization? I can see the mountain in the distance, you know what I mean? And I'm kind of headed toward that mountain. How important is that?
You know, I think it's important. In fact, it's really critical, because if we are trying to simply incrementally change what already exists, that's where outside innovators generally crush the existing incumbents. So I think being able to take a clean sheet approach and being able to visualize, again, the possibilities instead of just what is very important. However, and this is a big however, it doesn't mean that a leader needs to have a lightning bolt of inspiration and see the promised land and be able to, you know, evoke the gods and make it all happen magically. There actually is a very systematic approach to reinvention, and it's accessible to all of us at all levels of the organization. So through a sort of systematic and disciplined approach, we can begin chipping away, even if we don't have a crystal clear vision of what the possibilities may be.
In 2009, Lou Gerstner, who I think at that point either still was the CEO of IBM or was just leaving as CEO of IBM, wrote the best-selling business book, Who Says Elephants Can't Dance? And in it, he went into a great deal about how IBM transformed itself and had to deal with issues of size and structure and history and culture, and evolved from being a company that really was driven by the sale of what they call big iron or big machines, and has transformed itself into more of a consulting and more of a nimble consulting operation and software services type of firm. Is that still a valid model? Does that work? Do you buy into that type of solution?
You know, I think it's a terrific example of the possibilities of reinvention. You know, so many of us create these myths and blockers about, oh, well, I can't reinvent. We're too big. We're too small. I'm at the wrong point on the org chart. But really, reinvention is something that all of us must do. It's almost as if each of us need an implicit title on our business card that says reinventor or business artist or innovator. In IBM's case, had they stayed the course, had they said, oh, we're big metal, this is what we do, they may not even be here. And you look at many of the big brands that have fallen, from Borders Books to Pan Am Airlines, when they failed to change and they failed to adapt, they stopped winning and became a tombstone. So I think, to IBM's credit and to Lou Gerstner's credit, he saw the challenge, he saw that the world was changing, and he adapted. It's funny, so many of us believe that success is an arrival, a destination, that once you've cracked the code, the safe is open forever. Really, success is not like that at all. Success exists in a moment of time, in the context of many external factors that today are changing at a rate like none other in history. And so our responsibility as leaders, at any level in an organization, is when we achieve a level of success, certainly we should celebrate and slap high five and enjoy the moment, but that is the very point at which we should begin architecting the next chapter, because those that become complacent and clasp to previous ideas are the ones that end up history.
How drastic does a reinvention effort need to be? How far out of your backyard, out of your sweet spot, do you need to go? Does that make sense?
Totally. It's a great question. What I would encourage people to do is get comfortable being uncomfortable. You know, today we live in a world of dizzying speed, exponential complexity, and ruthless competition. So I think it's incumbent on us to always be, you know, pushing the envelope. That being said, reinvention efforts don't need to be a giant dramatic thing like happened with IBM. So what I really recommend is this concept of ongoing reinvention. And by the way, you can reinvent lots of different aspects within an organization. It's not only reinventing your products and services like IBM did successfully. You can reinvent your processes. You can reinvent your sales and marketing efforts. You can reinvent your customer base. You can reinvent your customer experience. So what I've seen is the best of the best are in a constant state of reinvention. They're always challenging conventional wisdom, but they kind of go from one point of reinvention to the next. So rather than trying to do all things at once and make it some massive reinvention, you might say, okay, we're going to reinvent our customer experience this year, and we're going to totally focus on making this delightful five senses customer experience to differentiate ourselves and to drive real value for our clients. Once that's successful, once they're enjoying the spoils of that effort, then they may go on to another aspect of reinvention. And so the whole point is we can't stay stagnant in this fist-fighting economy. We have to be constantly moving forward, but we can attack each area of the business systematically.
So you're not really waiting for anything. It might be little activity. It might be below the surface, but something is always happening.
That's exactly right. You know, one myth that many leaders seduce themselves into believing is that decline is this slow, gradual slope. And, oh, you'll see it coming. If something starts to happen, oh, you'll see it coming. You'll have plenty of time to react. Realistically, that's not what happens at all. What happens is that that slope is rather flat because previous momentum carries the business forward, yet decay is happening beneath the surface. And by the time the downward slope exists, there's nothing gradual about it. It's a cliff. And it becomes very, very difficult to respond when you're in the middle of a turnaround effort. In fact, it's funny, the research shows that once a company is in a leadership position and they have to embark on a turnaround effort, they're only ever able to regain that leadership position 10% of the time. Certainly not odds that any of us can rely on. So the word turnaround and reinvention are not synonymous, even though they're often used that way. To me, reinvention is the proactive process of reinventing before a problem exists, whereas a turnaround is responding to something negative.
The analogy I use sometimes when I'm talking about things like that is the lily pad on the pond analogy, which has been brought up over and over and over again, which is it's a water weed and it doubles in size every night, so to speak, or symbolically it doubles in size. But the pond is still, you can still fish on it and canoe on it and swim in it and stuff like that. And it doubles in size, and then you wake up one morning and the pond is completely covered with lily pads and you can't do anything with it. Well, you come to realize that only the day before, it was only half covered. You know what I mean? And people have got it in their heads that they'll be able to see that they'll be able to see the problem. You know what I mean? They'll be able to see the change and they'll be able to dodge it or mount some type of effort that will put them in a better position. It's human nature though, right?
It is. It is. And, you know, often, again, we feel that success is a destination and we've arrived and, you know, and it's great to feel that momentum and excitement around it. But that's exactly right. I mean, the problem is that the rate of change is so dramatic today. I mean, there's impending threats from every angle and every corner of the globe. So, again, it makes it incumbent upon us to really be the proactive source of it. It's funny. There's a term in the business lexicon that always rubs me the wrong way, which is cannibalization. Like, oh, we can't cannibalize our core business.
You don't want to hurt yourself, for God's sake.
Right. And to me, it's such a silly term because it implies that any organization has like world dominating power and can prevent innovation externally, which certainly none of us can. And so a much more productive approach is to flip that model upside down and be the cannibal, you know, to proactively be the source of disruption. I'll argue that almost any organization, someone one day will come and put you out of business.
Oh, sure.
Might as well be you.
Right. My next question is, what's the role of the board or maybe even investors as it relates to this concept of reinvention?
Well, I'll answer it from both angles. I think the board's responsibility is to be provocative and to be constantly prodding and poking the box, if you will, of leadership who can become complacent and become consumed with near-term results. The other thing is that boards often reward near-term things at the expense of long-term investment. So I think that rather than setting an incentive program around a CEO or a management team that only rewards near-term gains, I think that they need to help set compensation that really rewards longer-term efforts. From a leadership position, though, and as they think about their board of investors, I would say the inverse of that. In other words, that the leaders need to be on a regular basis making the case for change. You know, if you just go into a board after you've had great results for 3 years and say, I want to blow up the model, naturally that will be met with reluctance. So I think laying out a clear-cut case for change and laying out the risks of maintaining the status quo are the responsibility of leaders.
Let's deal with this issue of leadership again one more time here. Is reinvention only for the C-suite or senior corporate leadership, or can mid-level managers benefit from this type of thinking?
Yeah, it's another myth that we need to bust here. Well, CEOs need to be reinventing. Reinvention is the responsibility of us all at all levels of an organization. And as I mentioned earlier, we don't necessarily need to completely change the name on the building in order to have a successful reinvention effort. There can be small efforts along the way that lead to great things. So if you're a new manager or a mid-level leader, there's an incredible amount of opportunity to reinvent. You can reinvent how you handle your Monday morning staff meeting. You can reinvent the manner in which new ideas are presented and celebrated instead of punished. You can reinvent the cultural aspect of a small team. So I think it's important for each of us, no matter where we sit on the org chart, to be taking a fresh look at the possibilities and having the courage really to forge ahead and reshape and rethink what your role and that of your teams can be.
Is it ever too late to consider reinvention?
I wouldn't say it's too late. It's much easier to do it earlier. It's the akin of it's easy to blow out a match and it's very difficult to put out a 5-alarm fire. So the earlier the better. However, we can seek reinvention at any point. A good example is my hometown of Detroit, Michigan. You know, it's funny, I cover the story of Detroit throughout the book. 100 years ago, Detroit was the Silicon Valley of our country. This is where people came to build their fortunes and tons of innovation and entrepreneurship. And actually, we reinvented several times. We started as a fur trading industry and then moved into manufacturing. And when we did that, we were great. I mean, we built beautiful buildings and roads and hospitals. We became known as the Paris of the Midwest. Then we did a 180. We stopped reinventing. We became full of ourselves and we felt we were untouchable and it was all about protectionism and blame and bureaucracy. And when we stopped inventing and reinventing, we stopped winning and our city collapsed. Having just recently filed the largest municipal bankruptcy in our country's history, you might say, oh, it's too late to reinvent. And I've heard people say that Detroit should be sold for scrap metal. However, today, for those that haven't been there recently, there's this unbelievable spirit that's happening in my hometown. New restaurants popping up, new industries popping up. In my case, we're funding tech startups instead of bending steel. We're bending minds. Even though we've fallen so hard, our city, as an example, is racing back and we're at this unbelievable trajectory. And I truly believe that this 5-year stretch will be studied for decades as the greatest turnaround story in American history, one of the greatest reinventions in American history. So if Detroit can do it, my point is, we all can. And certainly, again, I'd recommend to reinvent early and proactively. But if we find ourselves in a tough spot, we certainly can't just throw up our hands and submit to defeat. On the other hand, at any point, we can step on the reinvention gas.
Okay, I'm going to get a little bit wonky here with you. Sisyphus, the Greek myth of Sisyphus, basically here's a ruler who's way too clever and gets himself in trouble with the gods, and he eventually is punished. But his punishment is to forever be rolling a boulder up a hill, pushing the boulder up the hill only to have it come down all over again. He never gets to the top of the hill with the boulder. So he's got to go back over and over again and push the boulder up the hill. And sometimes I refer to many of the efforts that are undertaken by corporations or nonprofits or whatever as this sort of being Team Sisyphus, where they're forever pushing their particular boulders up a hill. And maybe they have brainstorming meetings or they come up with all these great ideas to reinvent and rebuild and to innovate. And all these ideas come in and they flood in, but little to nothing is ever done with these ideas. And you have people who are almost burnt out from the ideation or stung from, you're not taking me seriously type of thing. This isn't just my perception. This is a real thing where people are being asked for good ideas and nothing is ever being done with them. Do you find that's true?
I really do. In my previous book, Disciplined Dreaming, the name itself deals with that challenge. In other words, adding discipline to dreaming. So dreaming without discipline is fanciful ideas and pushing the boulder up the hill and you never get there. Too much discipline and no dreaming entails bureaucracy and letting the competition beat you to the punch. So I think there's this really fine yin and yang that needs to happen. But I think one of the myths that people have about innovation and creativity and reinvention is that it's only about the ideation process. In other words, coming up with this new, hot, sexy idea. And while that's fun and it's an important part of the process, it's by no means the entire process. And one of the chapters in the Road to Reinvention is all about operational innovation. And so you're not innovating a new product or service or some whiz-bang marketing slogan. You're innovating how do you get stuff done? and you're innovating, how can you drive efficiency? How can you improve quality? You're applying the same type of creative thinking to solving an operational challenge, not just an ideation challenge. And to me, I think business is all about that fine balance between deploying the human gift of creativity that we all share, but few of us use, but balancing it with pragmatism and making sure that we are actually executing on the ideas that we create.
All right. And just to wrap up here a little bit, let's just talk about Detroit. You mentioned it a little bit in one of your conversations there, and it's really neat how you've knitted bits and pieces of the story of Detroit's recovery right now in the book, The Road to Reinvention. Let's just talk about current state of affairs here today. What's the Detroit update?
The Detroit update is really exciting. And to be clear, we still have many challenges. It's not utopia yet, but we are on an incredible road to reinvention of our own. And many people think about Detroit, you know, there's tires burning in the street and carjackings and stuff. That's just not the reality. Detroit is becoming a vibrant, wonderful place to work, live, and play. I'll give you an example. In Central Business District, where my office is, we have a 99% residential occupancy. Developers are scrambling to meet demand. And there are just incredible things happening. In our case, we're funding tech startups. So we've funded 24 high-tech companies that you would see in Silicon Valley or here in New York. These are people that are vibrant, creative class people that are pouring their hearts and souls into the city, that are living there, that are eating in local restaurants. And that's just one aspect of us diversifying the economy. There's a tremendous effort underway. There is a grade level light rail system that's coming in town to connect various points that are disparate in the region. We have a very business-minded mayor and governor at this point. So all the corruption of the days gone by has been broomed. The other thing is about the bankruptcy I'll just touch on. You know, people say, oh, Detroit is bankrupt, as if that is the final stake in the coffin. It really should have been done, first of all, 30 years ago. What this really allowed us to do is allowed us to shed $18 billion of an unmanageable debt load. And so while it was a painful process, what we're doing now is we're focusing on how do we invent for the future instead of deal with the past. And a few years from now, just like no one's talking about General Motors bankruptcy today, they're talking about profits or ignition switches, as it may be. I think in a few years, we won't even be thinking about the word bankruptcy. That allowed us to shed the past and allowed us to focus on the future.
If you were to meet a new manager or a middle manager at a Starbucks or in an elevator, and it might be in Detroit, it might be somewhere else, but they were kind of worried about the future, what would you tell them?
Well, I would say that worried about the future, it implies sort of a reactive state that we can't do anything about the future, as if the future will be thrust upon us. And I would say that move into the driver's seat, and no matter where you are in the organization, and that it's our responsibility to lead the future and to create it, in fact. You know, the rules of engagement have changed for leaders. In the past, it was about being compliant and following the rules and alignment and precision and all that. Today, that's merely the ante to play. And the leaders that will climb the ladder faster, the leaders that will drive real value in their organizations, are the ones that can bring an artistic sense, an innovation, and a creative sense to their work, not just simply one of compliance. I've heard it said that the MFA, the Masters of Fine Arts, is the new MBA. Whether or not you believe that wholeheartedly, I think there's no arguing that that's an important role that leaders need to embrace. So the young new manager, I would say, take a walk on the creative side and allow this gift that we all have to come out into your work. Push the boundaries, challenge conventional wisdom, defy tradition. And I think that will allow that person and their organization to win.
We've been speaking to Josh Linkner. He's the author of The Road to Reinvention, How to Drive Disruption and Accelerate Transformation. Josh, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Follow the American Management Association on Twitter to learn about upcoming free programs, the latest news, management insights, and special offers. You can follow us at AMANET. That's AMANET. Hope to tweet to you real soon. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.